Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, greetings from Tennis Podcast Towers, Melbourne, where you find myself, David and Matt on the sofa at a mere 33 minutes past midnight. It's an early night.
We've finally done it.
Of course, tennis hasn't finished for the day. Don't be ridiculous. It actually might be quite far from finished for the day because as we come to you on the second court at Melbourne Park, Maria Sakkari, the sixth seed, one of only two Netflix participants still standing, trails by a set to Zhu Lin, the 28-year-old from China. She is, of course, coming back. She's 3-1 up in the second set. Of course, as soon as she goes behind in the score, she mounts a comeback. It looks like it's probably going to a third. Who knows what will happen? We'll keep you posted. But if today has been anything to go by, what she might do is come back, but not all the way back.
Yeah.
I feel like that's been a theme. I feel like there have been a lot of people that saw what Andy Murray did this morning, and thought, I'll have a bit of that. But they're not quite Andy Murray.
Yeah, I thought this is infectious, and he's inspired a few here. And they'll all have those images of Murray in their minds when they're two sets to love down. And I think they may well have done. But I think it just shows how hard it is. It's hard enough to do what Denis Shapovalov did, for instance, getting back to two sets all. But then you've climbed one of the mountains, and then you've got to climb another one. And it's different in the fifth. It's so different.
Yes, we had Denis Shapovalov try it, Francis Tiafoe try it. Yannick Sinner did manage to come back from two sets to love down today, his first time doing that. And then there was almost a comeback from Danielle Collins, wasn't there? She won a set but couldn't finish it off. So yeah, that very much has been a theme. But I felt like I needed those sort of half comebacks in a way. I know that it sort of did end up sort of dragging out the evening session, but to me, that's what got me back into tennis after my Andy Murray hangover. Because
yes, there was a 5-minute period where it was like someone had run a jolt of electricity through Matt because it had been a slightly sluggish day.
That's generous.
Let's be honest.
It started
we were discussing
okay.
Sort of what topics other than tennis we could talk about in the podcast.
The thing is, even if you rewind further to how the day unfolded in the apartment, I mean, obviously we go to bed at 7 a.m. And then when you were up and about, everybody seemed in a great... We were all buzzing when we finally got up in the early afternoon. And then Matt hit the wall.
I did. I was prepared to almost have today as a bit of a write-off. But then, that bolt of electricity was watching three matches simultaneously. It was sort of first day vibes all over again. And they were all at such crucial moments. Korda, Medvedev, Hurkacz, Shapovalov and Tiafoe, Khachanov. I just found it absolutely exhilarating. I didn't know where to look. There were players fluffing chances. There were players taking their chances. It was just great there, and I feel like it's got me back into the tournament. It was my Muguruza Kvitova from the US Open which got me back into it after the Serena story had finished, and so I'm thankful for all those players. I'm re-engaged in the Australian Open.
I love watching Matt with his screens. It's one of my favorite Grand Slam things. Matt, I'm gonna let you choose which of those matches we talk about first. And while you choose, because I've put you on the spot there, I'm going to remind you all that this podcast and all our podcasts throughout the Australian Open are sponsored by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider that bring us to Indian Wells for the first time. There's a lot of big players already thinking about Indian Wells and thinking that can't come round soon enough. I saw a very sad post from Matteo Berrettini the other day. Carlos Alcaraz has posted a training photo today. I'm hoping for Indian Wells for him.
Oh, that'd be good,
wouldn't it? He's grown his hair out. David,
I noticed that.
He looks younger, doesn't he?
I always look at his hair as a sort of marker in some way, and I like it when he does the shaved head thing. But I'm already thinking about Indian Wells as well.
Although he's training on clay, so
yes,
maybe he's planning a comeback
before
then.
There, but I blooming hope he's going to be in Indian Wells. We will be in Indian Wells. We'll all be there together for the first time. We're obviously On Location are offering a 5% discount offer to all friends of the Tennis Podcast for all Steve Fergal's international tennis tours throughout 2023. They've given us one of their Steve Fergal's international tennis tours packages to the Miami Open presented by Itau. That's in March, obviously after Indian Wells, the second part of that Sunshine Double. And that will go to one lucky Tennis Podcast newsletter subscriber in the US or the UK. And that subscriber will win a 3-night stay at the Miami Open, the official tournament hotel, 2 guests, breakfast with Talon Greekspor if you want it, tickets for 2 full day and night sessions with premium hospitality, beer and wine, transportation to the venue, all of that included. The link to subscribe to the newsletter is in our show notes. It's absolutely free and easy to do that. Do it if you haven't already. And the URL to enter the competition is toursfortennis.com/podcast. Tours, the number 4, tennis.com/podcast. Matt, what would you like to lead with?
Well, I think it has to be the match we've just finished watching, Sebastian Korda beating Daniil Medvedev. And I'm going to throw it straight over to David, because David messaged after one game of this match to say that Korda is winning. So, David, A, congratulations.
Yeah.
And B, please tell us why you thought that.
That earned me precisely 0 points because I didn't put that in the newsletter predictions, which you can also read every day if you subscribe to the newsletter. But I mean, I was commentating on the first set, and I think it's the first time I've seen Korda up close. I've watched him for a couple of years now, always enjoy watching him on TV, but I did feel like he'd plateaued a little bit because of his movement. If you stretch him wide, I think there are times when his lack of explosiveness in his movement can end up holding him back. I also think I've tended to feel like his serve isn't as explosive as it should be. It doesn't do as much damage. He doesn't win enough easy points with it. But I watched the first 3 points of the match, and I ended up thinking, I'm not sure how Daniil Medvedev wins many points in this match, the way those 3 points unfolded, because Medvedev did what he does. He kept a great length. He moved well. He hit his hard ground strokes flat. But there was more on Seb Korda's ground strokes when it was toe-to-toe. Plus, when he was attacked, he diffused the attack with a backhand slice, and he has a really nice feel with that stroke. And then what I absolutely love is when he really pulls the trigger on a shot. It's not automatic point-ending power every time. It's not one of those forehands. It's measured power. It's controlled aggression that he's got. And so he puts a lot of pressure on you. But the big difference, what separates him from everybody else on the circuit today, is the instinct to go to the net after he's opened up the court. His confidence with the volleys, his touch around the net, his sheer wingspan. I mean, I said he'd got a wingspan like a pterodactyl. I mean, he's just everywhere. But I just looked at the makeup of the match and I thought, I don't see how Medvedev beats this guy if he can keep this up. And look, he only kept it up for 5 games. He broke twice and went 4-1 up. And then he really did come unstuck for a while. But the thing is, he somehow won the set. I mean, it was an hour and 25 minutes, that set. And then I don't think Medvedev was the same again, to be quite honest. And there's just the one final thing I'd say about Korda. One real weapon in his armory, his demeanour. He gives you nothing. He must be horrible to play against because you don't know where you stand. I think he's a real player, Seb Korda.
Can I tell you one other great thing about Seb Korda? He taps his dad, or he did today. I think it was his Rod Laver Arena debut, wasn't it? He tapped his dad's name.
Oh, did he?
On the Walker Champions on the way onto court.
Oh, that's lovely. I really like that.
Love that. Love that.
It's almost been downplayed this year, or not hyped, that storyline of his dad being an Australian Open champion, because I feel like didn't he win the juniors here, or won the juniors at a different set? Actually, I feel like he maybe won the juniors here. Certainly,
I think it was here.
Is it? Yeah, that was when that story was kind of done, wasn't it? Certainly from an insider's tennis point of view, I feel like we really have done that story. We're just not doing it now. And actually now is probably when we should be hyping that, because it's so cool. The whole family narrative is so cool. He's just done this on-court interview after the match, and he said, "I'm definitely the worst athlete in the family so far." And he is. He is. He's the least successful one in the family.
Two sisters. Both golfers.
Both LPGA pros. Nelly, a world number one. She's not world number one right now. Is that right? You two are the golf
experts. I
don't
think so. I think she's been injured.
Yeah, she has been. She has been, though. She's one of the biggest stars on the LPGA. And other sister Jessica, also an LPGA player. And he speaks so warmly about them, doesn't he? They're all really close and they spur one another on. He's a lovely lad, I think, Sebastian Korda. And he's got this beautiful, smooth game that's really easy on the eye. And the only question mark, as you said, has been the movement, I think. And he has clearly worked on that. It's like last year he was storing something up. I don't know, maybe it was just sort of written off as a progress year, because he did stall in my mind. And maybe that's just us wanting it all to happen for these youngsters straight away, which, you know, is not fair.
And I think what we probably do with youngsters is maybe read too much into results. Like, there are other ways of making progress than having good results, and that's like working on your game. And I think we just don't always see that, because all we really see are the results and the performances. But clearly there's been a lot of work done away from the court to improve him, as you say, and he does really seem to have made progress there. I mean, I think it was quite a good, as David sort of pointed out just immediately, it was quite a good matchup for him. Like, I don't think it was a massive test of that movement quite so much, because Medvedev does play sort of quite up and down the court, so it did seem to suit Korda, I think. The other sort of question mark has been a little bit of tightness in big moments, and I would say we did still see a little bit of that today. He sort of lost his lead in all the sets and ended up having to close it in sort of slightly more dramatic fashion than he would have liked, and that his sort of tennis would have suggested, because he was the better player. But gosh, he is so smooth, so composed, so poised. He hits the ball so cleanly, and that idea of you're sort of wondering how Medvedev's going to win points against Korda, that's been Medvedev's thing over the last few years. It's like, how do you win points against this guy? He's rock solid from the baseline. He's got a huge serve. He's got a great return. He's got enough power, and he's sort of kind of got fangs and is really resistant. But that's been missing from Medvedev, the resistance, ever since last year's Australian Open final, to be honest. It feels like he's changed as a player since then, for the worse. And yeah, I don't know, because he's been so good in Australia in the last few years, finalist last couple of years. This feels like a bit of a setback, really, for Medvedev again.
Yeah, it's all so flimsy, isn't it? The confidence and the robustness and the resilience, which can look as good as ever against more feeble opposition, with all due respect to his first two opponents. They just posed no challenge to him whatsoever, and he was able to look, you know, like a world number one again. But it's like, you know, someone that plasters on a smile and cries themselves to sleep at night. You know, it's a facade.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel quite real when it's tested.
Yeah. I am curious to know what's going on with him. I also think that, God, he'd have had to be at his absolute best today to beat Korda.
I'd say he didn't play badly, I don't think. Korda was
I think Korda is coming.
Awesome.
I mean, Korda's game is so balanced and lovely to look at that it can be... Maybe there's a forehand slight hitch on the forehand, or at least a slight weakness there that draws more errors come off that side. And he still looks really balanced, but he still arms it a bit and all the rest of it. So I don't think he's the finished article yet. I think you can hurt him, you can get to him, but I don't like you say, Medvedev's game doesn't really hurt him.
And his draw is fairly open, far more open than you would have expected that section to be at the start of the tournament. And we, you know, what's happened in what is it, the bottom half of the draw? Yeah, it seems to also be happening in the top half of the draw, because today we also lost Francis Tiafoe at the hands of Karen Khachanov. A comeback, but not all the way back. We had these two matches happening in tandem. Francis Tiafoe against Karen Khachanov on the John Cain Arena, and Denis Shapovalov against Hubert Hurkacz on the second court. And it was incredible the way they were tracking one another. Tiafoe and Shapovalov, I suppose Tiafoe a heavier favourite than Shapovalov. And actually, maybe that's twisting the narrative too far. Perhaps Hubert Hurkacz, who we are always guilty of sort of underrating and underplaying, he probably was the favourite in that match on paper. But they both go two sets to love down. And yet you always feel like, this isn't over. Something's going to happen here. Maybe these guys were watching Andy Murray last night and know what's possible. And lo and behold, they both start the long trudge. The long, long trudge. Back to competitiveness, and they didn't quite finish at the same stage. Shapovalov did make it into a fifth set. Tiafoe had 6 set points to take it into a fifth. He was 6-1 in the fourth set tiebreak. How did he lose it?
Well, we were... In fact, I had a tweet prepared on the podcast account to say, electric tennis from Tiafoe. He's found his US Open tiebreak form. And, of course, he won so many tiebreaks in that tournament. I think a record-breaking number. He was 6-1 up. He was playing fantastically. And then there were some cheap errors in there, for sure, from that position. It was almost like he had too much of a lead. He just got a little bit casual. And Khachanov wrestled it from him. I mean, he shows up at slams, and he's so sort of powerful from the baseline.
I thought
just,
you were going to say agricultural.
I feel like I can't really say that, because that's just your word.
It's David's word.
Yeah, yeah, it's both of your words.
It fits.
It does.
He's not showy-offy fit. Is he? He's not Martin Fucsovics with his shirt off celebration, but he's just low key, incredibly strong. It's very Stan Wawrinka like, isn't it? His strength and fitness, you know, getting stronger as the match goes on, seemingly. And that tallies with his career, because it feels like outside of the slams, he barely
registers
on our radar, these days. I know we won Paris, and obviously he's had the odd result, but he very rarely factors in, but comes alive at slams.
I think he's trying to get the most out of himself, and that's the slams is where you want to do that. And look, he is limited. He has a limitation on him. I don't think he's going to become a significantly better player than he always was, but he can beat people who probably have a higher ceiling, and he's done it He got a bit lucky against Jack Draper at the US Open, but he's done it against Cameron Norrie. I've seen him do it against a few players. And really, you know, Tiafoe's thinking, and we're thinking, Tiafoe is going to be going deep in this tournament. And he's just a horrible roadblock to a player like that, unless Tiafoe's absolutely on it all the way through. And he was too slow out of the blocks.
He was, but he was absolutely on it in that tiebreak. He was astonishing in the tiebreak. 6-1. The crowd were high on Francis
Tiafoe.
They
were in a frenzy.
It was like he was Aussie, you know. They were already blocking out their calendars for the fifth set, you know, cancelling whatever they had on. It was just a given, you know. Francis Tiafoe was in. He did his, you know, he does that charismatic, confident nod sort of towards his team, like, what are you stressing about? I've got this. This is fine. And I trusted him and believed him. I thought he was such a banker this tournament. When asked for my newsletter prediction yesterday, my thought process was, I'm not going to take any risks. I just need to bank a few points. And I went Tiafoe, because that's how I'd started to feel about him at Slams. And look, I don't want to be too harsh on him, because I don't think that's a terrible defeat at all. You know, we just discussed what Khachanov can do at Slams, but it is the sort of defeat that Francis Tiafoe has had, and has had a fair bit at Slams, you know, showing us what he can do, but ultimately coming up a little bit short. And I thought there'd been a shift. I really thought, I've reframed how I feel about Francis Tiafoe after the US Open last year, and after saying what he said after that defeat to Alcaraz, I'll be back, I'll win this thing one day. And the new intent he's got, the way he's talking and fronting up to some of the early stages of his career when he doesn't feel like he worked hard enough. I don't know, still very well might be a new Francis Tiafoe, I hope so. But today's defeat wasn't new Francis
Tiafoe. It's a different disappointment for him. And, you know, it's a blow, because the thing is, when you get on a run, when you do have that moment of reckoning in your life and you give everything and you will leave no stone unturned, you've got to make hay. You've got to start getting the results, because time can pass you by.
It was his birthday today as well.
Oh, dear.
Well, yesterday.
That's harsh.
Yeah. Left the court topless.
He spends a lot of time on court topless, Francis Tiafoe.
Yeah, maybe he thought, well, this outfit did look stupid after all.
Mm-hmm. I liked it.
It's one of those you got to be winning outfits, I think.
Yeah. In a few years' time, it might get shown to him and he might think,
well, go, did he lose in the third round in that? What else did we have? As you mentioned, Jannik Sinner did come from two sets to love down to beat Martin Fucsovics. That was one where as soon as Sinner got on top in the third set, you thought, he's got this. And I know we've had other results today that have, you know, said, indicated and proven that nothing's a foregone conclusion, but he's the better player.
That was Jannik Sinner. When most of the house was asleep.
David, I was just doing a really good job of talking about that match like I was awake for it.
Well, you caught up. But I mean, the thing with it was, exposed. That is the first time I think I've ever woken up to the tennis being a good hour in to the next day, you know, and there's been loads going on. That was a very strange sensation.
Yes, it was. But I mean, that's a sort of achievement unlocked, isn't it? I think coming back from two sets to love down for the first time. I think it's quite important to do that early. I always think of Carl Edmund, who has got this absolutely dreadful record when he goes two sets to love down. I don't think he's ever won a set when he goes two sets to love down. And you've got to, I think, build up that resistance and show players that, you know, you can do it. You know, just because you're two sets up on me doesn't mean you've won. And I think for someone like Sinner, against a guy like Fucsovics, who, as we know, is physically extremely strong, coming back from two sets down is good. Although it sounded to me like Fucsovics really sort of lost the plot a bit in that match. I mean, those last three sets weren't even close at all.
Well, now that I've been so rudely exposed, I might as well just just front up and say, I slept through most of Tsitsipas against Griekspor. So
didn't miss much.
anybody want to tell us about that?
Well, I was watching Sinner at the time. but I mean, you know, it was also over in a bit of a flash. I mean, there was one close set, and I get the sense that Tsitsipas is on it. Is in as good a place as he could be right now. And I noticed that Andrew does our Twitter said he feels something is different. He thinks this might be the one.
I was going to point out that tweet as well, because Andrew didn't sleep through Tsitsipas today and has paid more attention. You know, his other matches have been happening when our attention has been divided among, you know, lots of matches and lots of stories. I haven't watched as much of it as Andrew, but I take his word for it.
Yeah, and I think that's the point, isn't it? Like, we have been drawn to Tsitsipas in slams before because he's got himself in a bit of a pickle in one of the early rounds, you know, losing to Daniel Galan, or he ran into Nick Kyrgios at Wimbledon. He has drawn our attention in the first week of slams, and for top players, that's usually a bad thing. I think what feels different is that he's completely sort of fuss-free. He's had really good scheduling. He's not ended up having to play really, really late and that sort of mess him up. He's just got the job done, straight sets, and that to me is what feels different. Like, he's just getting on with it and he's not getting embroiled in these slightly awkward matches. And he's completely unbeaten this year, isn't he? He was unbeaten at the United Cup, had some really tough wins there, I think, which have helped him against Chorich and Berrettini in particular.
I think he's unbeaten for the season.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
it's going well, isn't it?
Not doing too well with the old sleep, you see.
Mm. I was distracted. Full disclosure again. No bit to hide here. I was distracted by my next talking point, which is pre-signed autographs.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
This is a thing I do know about, that Tsitsipas is doing this tournament.
Tell us.
Well, he's dishing out, instead of signing autographs, he's dishing out pre-signed pictures of himself.
Studio or action?
And there also seems to be something going on involving a QR code, which I don't quite
That's
understand.
Very well thought through.
Yeah. I mean, as Matt said to me when I was making some disdainful comments about this yesterday, I think it was, or this morning, or time has ceased to mean anything. You know, it cuts out some faff.
Yeah, you should be all over this.
I should be all over it, but
there's something about,
goodness me, David, imagine having pre-signed photos of yourself that you're just distributing.
It's funny you mention that.
I don't know. It's an indicator of, okay, no feet are on the ground whatsoever.
Well, there's that aspect, and there's, like, it's quite a nice thing to take the time and sign someone's tennis ball, or, you know, they don't want the thing that Tsitsipas is giving them signed. They want their thing signed, or their T-shirt.
They want the memory of, oh my God, that rush of you signing my one.
Personal touch. This is just sort of very clinical.
It's not because we like your autograph particularly. Yeah. You know, it's not.
Also, has he hand signed these photographs? Do we think?
That's a very good point.
Or has he just stuck them through a photocopier about 100 billion times?
I know what I would speculate the answer to that question is, but I've no idea.
I mean, it's innovative. It's efficient.
I don't think it's that innovative.
It's quite innovative for a tennis player in terms of signing an autograph. Nobody else has thought that. I have thought there was one other player I think I've seen do that before. Can't remember who it is, but I'm sure I've seen that once before. But
Well, we know Tsitsipas likes to plagiarise his tweets, so maybe he's copied this off someone else as well.
Yeah, today he posted a photo of himself. Have you seen this? Photo of himself, I think. I mean, it is a lovely photo, hitting a backhand, I think. and he's just sort of written a little tribute to the beauty of his own tennis.
Great.
I think Stefanos and I just operate on slightly different wavelengths. I think that's
fairly true. Safe ground to assume. he's different.
Last result on the men's side to cover, Yuri Lehechka.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one.
Yes, you did, David. Beat Cameron Norrie in five sets. I know Cameron Norrie went off to get his knee strapped in the latter stages of this, but to my eye, he seemed to be moving just fine. He looked a little sort of anemic and underpowered generally, but he certainly didn't look injured, and he said in press afterwards, the knee was not the reason that he lost that match. We'll come on to what else he said in press afterwards, but just took us through what you saw.
He didn't look hindered to me. He looked a little underpowered, I would say. And, I mean, the fact that he got himself two sets to one up, though, and didn't win would be a concern and would irritate him, I'm sure. But he was 6-4 down in the first set tiebreak as well. I mean, there were three set points for Lehechka. And I feel like, actually, the story here is Lehechka. He has a very nice game. I mean, it's a little similar to Korda. Languid, relaxed, sees it well, has a beautifully sweet strike on the ball. So he ends up getting more on the ball with not apparently a great deal of effort than Norrie does. And Norrie's heaving the ball back and forth, you know, and he's running all over the shot. And then suddenly the point's over because Lehechka's just whipped a winner. And I mean, he's 71 in the world, he's 21 years of age, he's definitely talented and definitely has a positive future, I would say. But again, it's a bit like the thing with Tiafoe and Fritz yesterday. This was supposed to be Norrie's time, and it's only one out of four Grand Slams in a year and all the rest of it. Doesn't mean he's a disaster suddenly, but it's a real missed opportunity.
And I think there's quite a clear reason for it. You know, looking at his quotes from after the match, he was asked about the volume of tennis he'd played in the lead up to this first Grand Slam of the year and the volume of tennis that he played in the off season. He played an exhibition in Saudi Arabia, and while he was there, he was quizzed about why he's playing in Saudi Arabia. That's a pretty controversial thing to do, I think. And he said, to give myself the best chance of winning the Australian Open. So I think when you've said that, I think judging him on how he's done at the Australian Open, I think is fair and square in terms of assessing his decisions in the off-season and pre-season. He fronted up and said, I peaked last week. He said, I peaked at the United Cup, is what he said, when he beat Rafael Nadal and played brilliantly. Then he went to Auckland and continued to play well, but suffered that really crushing defeat to Richard Gasquet in the final. And I think emotionally that took a lot out of him, because he wanted that Auckland title for, you know, to all intents and purposes, that's kind of a home title for him in Auckland. That is where he spent a lot of his childhood, it's where his parents still live. I totally respect Auckland being a big deal for him and him wanting to play it regardless of where it's situated in the calendar. I respect that. But top players that genuinely are contenders at Grand Slams make ruthless decisions. Scheduling is such an enormous factor in success, and it's not something we talk about that much because it's not very sexy, it's not a particularly scintillating talking point, but you know, look at the top players and how they've scheduled themselves.
Well, I mean, I made the point a few weeks ago at the start of the season, let's have a look to see how these players who are playing all the way through December get on when push comes to shove at the Australian Open. Casper Ruud out, Cameron Norrie out, and Taylor Fritz won a $1 million at some exhibition.
That was Saudi Arabia. That was the same one,
right.
Saudi Arabia.
So, I don't know. I mean, and I can't prove cause and effect, but that's how I felt at the time. And here we are.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Speaking of here we are, Zhu Lin, 2-1 up, 15 love serving. Against six seed Maria Sakkari.
Sakkari's got her right where she wants
absolutely.
Her. She's gone down a break in the third. This is smart.
I genuinely would be more worried about Sakkari if she had the break right now.
Oh, yeah, I said that completely seriously.
But if she's going to win the match, she's got to be ahead at some point.
She can time it.
You've hit the nail on the head, David.
Re-sport.
Re-sport and Sakkari's problem. We'll keep you posted on that, even though you already know the result as you're listening to this. In terms of the women's matches today, we had some real contrast, didn't we? We had Jessica Pegula just in a total hurry dismissing Marta Kostyuk, 6-love, 6-2. We all thought this was tricky.
I hovered over Marta Kostyuk winning that in the newsletter predictions.
I think I said, good shout. You know, I have Pegula winning the title. I think she'll fight through, but this is a test. She laughed in the face of that test. I thought this was a real statement from Pegula. She's entered women's doubles and mixed doubles. She did lose in the mixed today, but I just think that's brilliant from Pegula that she's doing that. It's real John McEnroe stuff, you know, using the doubles for her practice. I think that's absolutely brilliant. And she plays Barbora Krejcikova next.
Yeah.
Who's just quietly playing some of her absolute best tennis, Krejcikova.
Yeah, I didn't see this match live because it was 3 hours after I'd gone to bed.
What's that all about?
But I went back and looked at Krejcikova's transcript and she was buzzing with how she'd played. And she sort of listed everything that she was pleased with.
She asked to list three strengths and
came up with four.
Came up with sort of 18.
What she did do was basically describe all the shots in tennis and said that she was doing them well. You know, her serve, her return, her ground strokes and her footwork, I think, or her movement were sort of what she picked out. And I'm really, really, really excited for this match. Just as a tennis match, you know. I think because Pegula is probably in the best form of anyone on the tour right now. If you look at her results this season, you know, she's barely dropping games, other than having, you know, after she lost the opening match of the season against Kvitova, she's just been flawless. But Krejcikova has been there and done it at a slam, and is I still think she's deceptively good, and you can overlook Craig Sheikova all too easily. I'm sure I have done.
And you can sort of look at her results on paper and go, oh, she's done nothing since winning the French Open. She was injured for so much of that.
So
and then
long.
When she was coming back, got COVID at the most inopportune time. You know, I'm not sure how many of her results she's been fully fit for since she won that French Open. Mm. I can't wait for that match.
That could be match of the tournament, style-wise, couldn't it?
Yeah. I think it's a good recipe. As well. I'm really excited for it. Iga Świątek said, I see that love and two, Jessica, and I raise you 6-love, 6-1.
Bagel and a breadstick.
55 minutes against Cristina Buescher, the qualifier from Spain, that denied us Świątek Andreescu.
Mm. If you're going to deny us that,
yeah,
got to win more than one game.
Agreed.
I mean, that's harsh, because Świątek, it's very tough to win more than one game against Świątek,
but I was thinking about
Andreescu.
It would have been so interesting to see what Andreescu, if she could have had any answers to that.
Yeah, look, she'd probably have lost Andreescu, but I want to see it. I want to see...
Several times.
Yeah, like every week for the rest of my life.
let's have it.
Coco, there was some commiserating on Twitter... It's like Bianca Andreescu discovered Twitter this week. She's
in her Twitter era, as
she
said.
Yes, in her own words. and she did some commiserating with Thanasi Kokkinakis about losing from a winning position. We shouldn't have lost then, should you, Bianca? Anyway, Coco Gauff lost a whopping 5 games against Bernarda Pera and plays Yelena Ostapenko next.
Oh, my word. I didn't know she was still in the tournament.
I think today's women's matches were all about setting up amazing next round matches in this half of the draw. Because
and I think
Gauff,
that could
Ostapenko,
be the case tomorrow as well.
Yeah, I think so.
The matches on paper don't look great tomorrow. But I think it's that sort of... flat first week, amazing second week kind of conundrum. I think we get through this and next week could be incredible.
Yeah, because the one I'm just as excited for is Świątek Rybakina. Like,
when's that?
That is on Sunday?
Oh, okay.
Sunday. Is today Friday? No, yes, today was Friday. It's now very much Saturday. But that will be on Sunday. Forget all that. That was extremely confusing. It's in 2 days.
Okay.
And I'm really excited about that. That feels like a proper test for Świątek. These courts, these conditions suit Rybakina. She was asked, as she sort of always is in press conferences, about her new status and whether she's being respected enough. And she said both, I don't care what court I'm on, and also it's motivation for me so that next time they don't put me on court 13. Like, I think she really does care. She really isn't happy about
it.
I'm
really glad she cares.
Me too.
And isn't happy. She
shouldn't
be. And she's got this, you know, I keep thinking about that press conference after she won Wimbledon when everyone was just disappointed in her for not showing more outward emotion. And, you know, she's sort of been categorised as this sort of emotionless zombie person that doesn't care enough. And, I don't know, it shows a bit of steel and a bit of fang that she's pissed off that she's on court 13 as a Wimbledon champion.
Yeah, and tennis players with a bit of a point to prove.
Yeah, dangerous.
Great. You know, and, you know, Andy
Here
Murray's been
it.
Doing it for years. And, you know, it's in a very different way that Rybakina's doing it. But I think it is there. And... she beat Collins today, I think it was 6-2, 5-7, 6-2, and Collins did really well to turn it into a sort of Collins-style match in that second set. She made it a scrap. She took her only break point to pinch the second set. But Rybakina was on top in this match. She was clearly the better player, and I think that's really dangerous for Świątek. You know, like, that serve... her ground strokes in these conditions, I don't know. Like, if Rybakina is playing well, how do you stop her? Is sort of just what I've got in my mind. But probably if anyone can, it is Świątek. So I'm so, so excited for that match.
They've got a history going back to juniors, haven't they? Świątek was asked to recall sort of early meetings with Rybakina, and she remembers Rybakina beating her on clay.
Yes.
In the juniors.
And she said that she got really tight in that match because it was streamed on the internet and she was aware that people were watching her.
She said it like she was sort of an old person talking about the internet, didn't she? It was streamed on the internet. As if she's not someone that was sort of born into a internet era. Danielle Collins, she sort of... She's made sort of a scene-stealing cameo in this tournament, hasn't she? Mm. But you won't remember her for being significant in terms of results, you know, third round loss. But she really gave us the Danielle Collins experience through three rounds, didn't
absolutely.
She? And I'm grateful to her for that.
In some ways, I think I'll remember more about this run than last year's.
Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And just as a little tease, as if having the chance to win the on-location package for the Miami Open wasn't enough. Another reason to subscribe to the newsletter is an excellent Świątek Rybakina-related stat, which I assisted with today. I was Matt's research assistant.
It was
great.
It was amazing.
Set me to work.
I haven't even seen the stat yet.
I learnt new things about how to use Wikipedia. It was great.
Big day.
Yes, so make sure you subscribe to the newsletter, everyone.
Always sounds a bit scary when she says that, doesn't it?
I genuinely...
it's a little bit of a threat.
This comes from somebody that is very... I do an inventory of crap, pointless newsletters that I've had to subscribe to for a discount code of some sort on some clothes that I don't need. I do it sort of monthly because I am subscribed to all sorts of nonsense.
Yeah, okay.
So this comes from that place. I just don't understand why anybody wouldn't... If you like this podcast... I don't get why you wouldn't want the newsletter.
Because it's really good. It's good.
It's really good. We've nailed it. It's not just, you know, anyway. Why wouldn't you want Matt's stat every day?
Yeah, and our predictions.
Madison Keys, bit of a collapse from her against Victoria Azarenka.
A bit.
I don't know how to view this. Like, is Azarenka happening again? I feel like...
Did anybody see the first set?
Yes.
What? Tell me about the first set, because I saw 2 and 3.
Oh, okay.
Explain it to me.
Well, Azarenka was really having trouble with her serve in that first set. And honestly, Keys was looking great. I just thought, wow, Madison Keys is flying here. She was crushing the ball as she does. As I said, completely dominating Azarenka's serve. And I just felt like she was going to go on to win this match. It just looked like this was just going to be over very, very straightforwardly. And then, almost without anything happening, Keys lost her game. And I think she just gave Azarenka an inch. And Azarenka was then sort of competitive. And you don't want to... I don't think Keys wants to get into a sort of... any kind of battle with Azarenka, because Azarenka's a much sort of better match player, I would say.
She craves a contest it. And a head-to-head. And
absolutely
come on,
loves it. And
throw down.
And the early stages of that second set turned into that. And right. That just sort of completely changed the feel of the match.
I mean, I saw sets 2 and 3 and Madison Keys looked like a park player the way she was missing, and she seemed to have no control over normal rally shots.
Yeah.
And the thing that has always got me with her is I don't think she really knows what to be, because she's a massive ball striker, and when it goes in, it's like the first set, 6-1. It's amazing. But I'm sure she's been told so many times there's only so far that can take you, because you have to be consistent. You have to find patterns that work and don't result in a, you know, wheelbarrow full of unforced errors. And so she late in the second set, she was trying, or third set, she was trying to rally with Azarenka and not miss and be, you know, And Azarenka's quite happy to do that with you all day. And then eventually she would miss because she just panics or she doesn't have that level of control. She's got had a good career at Madison Keys in terms of, you know, solid semifinals and quarterfinals and a final. But I'm still underwhelmed by what she's done, given her talent. And I feel bad saying that because she seems like a lovely person. I don't know her personally, but she always comes across really well. But I always thought she'd do more than she has.
Brad Gilbert confidently predicted on this podcast. This was during the time that he had blocked you on Twitter, David.
Yeah,
so I don't know if you're aware of this.
Yeah.
Confidently predicted on this podcast that she'd be a world number one. And that just didn't seem controversial at the time, did it?
No.
It was a bold statement to put it out there, but it wasn't like, whoa.
And then I put that to Martina Navratilova in commentary, and she said, I think she might do it sooner.
Yeah.
Back then.
Feels like a long time ago.
That was about 2014, 15. It was a long time ago.
I've written in my extremely premature notes here, Sakkari next for Azarenka. But as we come to you, Sakkari trails 2-3 in the deciding set with Zhu Lin. And I don't think we're going to get the result of this in this pod, but it could be that Felix Auger-Aliassime is the last Netflix kid standing at the fourth round stage, as if he needed extra pressure to be successful.
Who's he got now?
He plays Yuri Lehechka.
Ooh,
and I think that's dangerous.
That could
for
be a
him.
Good match. Because the thing with Felix is he is a patterns player. And when it's going well, he is relentless and very difficult to beat. But Lehechka's more of a sort of flair player. He's a talent, that guy.
Yeah, I liked Felix over Norrie in that fourth round. He's got a really good record against Norrie, 5-1, I think. Lehechka's a bit of a curveball in there. That's tricky. He was a bit better today, Auger-Aliassime. He started better. He won the first set 6-1 against Francisco Cerúndolo, dropped the second, and then won the third and fourth, you know, pretty comfortably. He's still not playing his best tennis, and I still think sooner rather than later he's going to need to find it.
And the thing is with the Lehechka match, he's so much the favourite on paper to win it. I know that we've all paid attention to Yuri Lehechka today because he was playing a Brit, and David, you were commentating on it, so we know what he can do and what he's capable of and that he's far better than his ranking. But people are going to look at that draw and go, wow, it's really opened up for Felix. What an opportunity. And that's a test for him mentally.
And really, it has opened up for him. I mean, I totally take all your points, but this is a big test for him.
Yeah.
I think we find out quite a lot more about Felix this week, this next 10 days.
And about Matt's predictions.
Yeah.
Excited for it.
He's not backing down.
Felix,
have we got to look forward to tomorrow? I don't know why I'm clicking on the link, because I know exactly what we've got to look forward to tomorrow, and that's anxiety and lack of sleep.
Does that mean Andy Murray's playing?
Who is ready for it?
Not me.
I can't believe he's playing Roberto Bautista Agut. Tennis gods are trolling us.
4 years on.
Honestly.
From the retirement match. And the ceremony. And the video.
Yeah. So, please tell me somebody's unearthed that video on Twitter. We'll look into it for you folks.
You mean the retirement ceremony?
Yeah, the
video.
Retirement ceremony.
Oh, it's out there. It's on the Australian Open's YouTube page, I believe.
Caroline Wozniacki asking him to coach her.
Yeah, Caroline Wozniacki and Roger Federer, now both retired.
She's had two kids.
Yeah, he's still going. He looks better than he did then.
He does. Right, tomorrow.
Oh, Sakkari back on serve. She's timed
she
her comeback. Maybe gone too soon. Who could say?
The appetizer ahead of the trauma tomorrow is Gracheva against Karolina Pliskova, who I'm well aware we've not mentioned, so will probably win the title. They're first on Rod Laver Arena. Then Camilla Giorgi against Belinda Bencic. Benjamin Bonzi takes on Alex de Minaur, last in the day session. And then night session is Grigor Dimitrov against Novak Djokovic, followed by Magda Linette and Ekaterina Alexandrova. And I hate that scheduling. I hate that that's on last after Dimitrov, Djokovic, which we all know could be a marathon.
Mm.
Because if Dimitrov's got any sense about him, he needs to make that physical.
And even if it's not a marathon, it's likely to be 2.5, 3 hours, and then you're looking at go on court at 10
and
o'clock.
And everybody knows that as much as that could be a brilliant match, Magdalena Ekaterina Alexandrova, not many people know those two. They're not big names. No one will stick around to watch it. And it'll be empty, and it'll look crap, and it'll be bad for the players. The second court... What a hype woman I am.
I was going to say, get your tickets tomorrow.
I think it could be great. But we all know, we know it's great. Yeah. But I don't expect your average tennis punter to go, oh, Magdalena Ekaterina Alexandrova.
I do find it slightly a surprising choice that they've chosen that particular match.
It seems to me that they're getting... rightly, a lot of criticism for the late finish last night, and they're anticipating another late finish after Djokovic Dimitrov, and they want a far more low-key match in that slot so that people don't kick up such a fuss. You know, if it's only Magdalena and Ekaterina Alexandra in that slot, it's going to have much less attention than it being Andy Murray and Tanasi Kokkinakis. That's how it feels. That might be me being sort of overly cynical, but that is how it feels. And it doesn't really feel like a Rod Laver Arena match, but it would probably be better played during the day in a proper atmosphere on a court sort of that suits it. I don't know, like Court 3 or Kia Arena somewhere. Instead, it feels a little bit sort of dastardly. That
bit of a stitch up.
That scheduling. Yeah,
and they've put a doubles match on after Murray, Bautista Agut. Rinki Hijikata and Jason Kubler against Lloyd Glasspool, Harry Heliavara. As if anybody with a ticket for the second court tomorrow night is thinking, oh, I might not get my money's worth out of Andy Murray, Roberto Bautista Agut. Fancy a bit more tennis there. Fancy watching some athletes that have been sent out at midnight after the food kiosks have closed.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? They love the doubles here. They love a home player, but yeah, it is so.
You don't need it. I'm not. It's nothing about that match.
No, but I agree.
It's somewhere where it'll have a
the lateness of it all
crowd, just, and you know those players won't be put through, you know, whole evening of waiting and wandering. And anyway, day session on that court: Nuria Prusas Diaz against Donna Vekic, then Andre Rublev against Dan Evans. Interesting one, that. Sabalenka Mertens, third on there. They're, of course, doubles partners, or have been doubles partners, lost lots in the past, won slams together. And then it is the trauma, the anxiety, the sleep deprivation that is Andy Murray against Roberto Bautista Agut.
How is this happening?
What's on the John Cainer Arena tomorrow? Hugo Humbert against Holger Rune. Alexei Popperin against Ben Shelton. The Tsitsipas brothers are playing in doubles on the Kia Arena.
I had no idea they were entered.
Yeah, Stefanos, I think they got their first Grand Slam win together in round one.
Petros has won a Grand Slam match.
Well done, Petros.
Wonder who did the work.
Do you think he has signed autographs that he gives out as well?
Oh, if he does, I want one.
Do you know?
I really want one, and I want to post it.
Nothing would surprise me.
I bet he does.
JJ Wolf, Michael Moe.
Stefano said that
Siemens.
No tennis player works as hard as Petros.
Yeah.
Yeah, actual quote.
Sorry, Rafa. Petros, see?
No tennis player works as hard as Petros. Caroline Garcia, Laura Siegmund. That is on Kia Arena. We have a Fruvitova. Linda against Markéta Vondroušová.
Intrigued by that one.
1573. Zheng Shui and Katie Volinets. That's the one I was looking for. And Tommy Paul against Jensen Brooksby. That's on court three tomorrow.
Oh, hello.
Goff and Pegula are playing doubles on court three, second on tomorrow.
Tommy Paul against Jensen Brooksby feels like a bit of an aggro place to me. Yeah.
All the places that Jensen Brooksby goes are a potential aggro places. Brooksby's, he winds people up.
Brooksby's not one of the bros,
he's
is
not
he?
In the gang.
Yeah, so.
And he's okay with it. I love that.
I want to see that.
Maria Sakkari has not got the job done, and she's got a lead at the moment, so It's all...
Hold on to everything.
Hold on to your hats, folks. We're not going to get the result in. But that doesn't matter because you already know the result as you're looking at this and as you're listening to this, rather. Oh, dear. We need to go to sleep, don't we? I'm going to tell you that Cordelia is our mascot for this Australian Open. She's a lovely cat. There's a picture of her on our Instagram at the moment. So head over there for all sorts of content. It's
you've been flying today.
It's a fun place to be.
Yeah.
David, Maisie, how
right,
you doing?
Maisie, another win for us today, Maisie. Nishioka did the job. We're rolling.
Matt, Darwin.
Yep, points today. Thanks,
needed them.
Thanks to Rebecca, really did need them.
I did. Francis Tiafo was my banker, Xenia, and it didn't go well. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Ilana Kloss. We have our top folks, Jamie, Drew, and Hannah. They're our executive producers, and we thank them very much for being so. And we have the long awaited return of shout outs.
We do. We have just three today, and the first is for Pauline in Alexandria, Virginia, USA.
Oh, Pauline?
Like Pauline Parmentier.
Wow, Catherine.
Pulled it out the bag there, didn't I?
That's so good.
Thank you so much for coming, because I was going to just sit here staring at you. Pauline, oh, thank you so much for
thank
being a friend
you,
of the pod, though.
We've also got Zhiyong Yao in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, that's on my to-visit list, although I don't think the weather is very good.
Home of the
it's
Seahawks.
It's sort of famously the...
I don't care.
Most cloud... Like, the rainiest city.
Yeah, I want to be there in the rain with all the Seattle Seahawks fans.
I feel like that's an achievable dream for you,
yeah,
David.
I'm up for it.
Thank
Ji
you.
Yong says,
thank you, Ji-Yong.
Started listening to the podcast during Federer's run at the 2017 Australian Open. I was a big Federer fan back then, but listening to the podcast has turned me into a big tennis fan.
Oh,
which I thought was very nice.
Love that, Ji Yong. Thank you.
That's 6 years ago. Mm. How's that happened?
Gosh.
Ji Yong, thanks so much.
And finally, we've got Stefan, I'm not sure how to pronounce this surname, Wagen, maybe, in Urdorf, which is next to Zurich in Switzerland.
Oh.
Well, I've been to Zurich.
Yeah, I've been through Zurich. How do I say it? Zurich. Stefan, like Edberg, the old.
In fact, I've been to Zurich with Stefan Edberg.
Now we're talking.
We didn't travel together. I made that sound misleading. I've been in Zurich with Stefan Edberg.
What's Stefan Edberg like, Catherine?
Exactly as you'd expect.
Lovely.
Lovely, doesn't age.
Yep.
Actually, a bit of aggro between him and Goran Ivanisevic at the Legends, the Champions Tour event that I was working at out there. It's a story for another time,
yeah, this
Stefan.
Was pre-podcast days, Matt. And I just remember, I think it was like an early omen that we were going to have a podcast because Catherine was very quickly in touch to tell me all about it and we got very excited.
I will tell you the punchline and I'll promise to tell the story in full on a podcast in the future. I'm getting good at these teasers, aren't I? The punchline to the story is Goran Ivanisevic throwing a runners-up trophy in the bin. And on that note, folks...
His plate.
He doesn't like plates. On that note, folks, I'll say thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting to our friends of the pod. And we will speak to you tomorrow. Brackets today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.